This is it, folks. We are wrapping up our best of series that we started right before launching season 3. So what we're going to give you is a great question from my man B. We've got a minority power ranking in there. And we also mix it up by giving you a little taste of our interview of one of our favorite guests of all times, Belinda, the patron saint of gin. So this episode has a great combination of different energy. We're all vibing pretty well. It's one of my favorite episodes, and I hope you guys enjoy it as well.
Welcome to the Thirst World Problems Podcast, where we talk about drinks, current events, music, and more. Now, here's your host, Nick Dugal, and his panel of experts, B, Bell, and the infamous Doc.
Okay, so I just had a question for you guys. So I'm taking a couple classes at university. I thought I would pose this question to you guys because I thought it was actually pretty cool. So I was just wondering how your childhood and where, not just your childhood, but more so place is the main thing here. How, where, the places you lived have kind of shaped and made you who you are in terms of a couple qualities or something like that. So I'll kick it off just to give you guys an example. So my parents were here in like 1988 or something like that. Like, I don't know the exact time, but in and around there, we all lived together. We probably had 10 to 12 people living in a 3-bedroom house, like one washroom, that kind of thing. So we were always kind of tight knit. So that was one of the things I said in class was that, you know, us always being together and then after, you know, one washroom at 7 a.m. in the morning, like, you know, parents, 5-6 kids, grandma, grandpa, that type thing. Then after that, when we got our own house, it was just across the street, actually, like across a park. So we were always pretty still close-knit and, you know, like I was probably sleeping over 4 or 5 times and whatnot. So that always kind of kept that family atmosphere for us at home. And I think that kind of rubs off on how I kind of think of things now. So I was just wondering if there's any, because I haven't really asked you guys about that. And I'm sure the listeners would like to know our personal stories on how have that, because we had a lot of people in my class that lived in other countries and then they come back and they have a whole new perspective, right? So not just,
it's kind of interesting,
you know, not just that do you live in the city you live in, but maybe somewhere you've been that's changed your perspective and kind of changed who you are as a person, I would say. Bell, did you have anything that kind of strikes?
That's a very good question, actually. Very good.
No, that is.
And main thing I want to focus on here is place, like not just how you were raised, nothing like that, more so how the place defines you, because certain living in certain communities, maybe a richer area, poorer area, like you see different things that will change how you are. Like for just an example, sorry, I'll let you go. But like, for example, I remember times waking up and like we would have like graffiti on our walls and like me and my dad would have to use white spray paint to like go over it, like couple times a month, for example. Just stuff like that, right? That makes you a little bit in life, makes you, when you see that stuff, you don't just think one way. You think a little bit critically on why that happens or what people go through in terms of that, right? So,
well, I know one of the things that happens whenever I have conversations with other people, especially people later on in their years, because I, as you know, I'm substantially older than my man B over here, is that my group of friends, like my close-knit group of friends, there's probably about 12 of us that are really close. And we've all known each other from elementary. So like we've all grown up with each other throughout all these years and seen, like, so I knew kids when they were 6-7 years old who have kids that are 12-13 years old of their own, kind of thing, right? Like going through are almost high school level kids. So I've grown up with that as my close group of friends. So vacations, you know, like, you know, medical emergencies, just all kinds of shit that you see as a group. We've all come up, but we've always had the same group of friends. And I meet a lot of people who are like, oh, like my oldest friend is like from university. Like, you know, there's very rarely that other groups will say that they've known not just one person, but a whole group since elementary.
So you think that's special in that case?
Well, yeah, because I just know, just like on a trust level, just even understanding someone. Like we can hop in a car with one of my close friends, and we might not talk for the car ride there or whatever. And it's not because anyone's mad at each other or anything like that. It's just because, you know, everything's just chill and you can get out and just start about this. Oh, what about this? What about that? And it's like you've never, like, you know, you haven't lost a beat or someone's moved away and just come back and you strike up that conversation right where you left off. And there's just no, like, no, you're not worried about anything. There's no stepping back, right? So that's always been something that I've always found always gave me a sense of relief and I guess kind of help with like any stress or anxiety you would have of like meeting new people is that I know I could always count on. There's a certain group of people I know I could always count on regardless of what the situation is. But as far as like we're talking about like where you've lived, I've also had to move away and it's not quite my childhood, but later on in life, I've had to move away.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be childhood. It could be any phase. And
yeah. So I've had to move away to take a job. And I guess it was probably about, I don't know, like early 20s kind of thing where I've moved away for a few years and I was out of touch with everybody. And it wasn't until I got to that spot, like I didn't think it would be that big of a deal, but it wasn't until I got to that spot and you're not really able to just do some of the things like what I was kind of mentioning, like on a Friday night, just go and play video games over at a buddy's place or like be like, oh, I've got the day off. Like, let's just go grab a lunch here. Whereas you have to now like meet a new set of people. And it's just a different vibe where people are just like, yeah, like we'll go out and we'll do this or we'll do that. You go to a club, you go do this, you do that. But it's not really like that chill, just relax. Like, hey, I'm just watching some like stupid sitcom. Do you want to come over and like just watch that? Right? Like it's not, or like you have that back and forth where you don't have to do that. So that really made me appreciate what I had back home. So when I moved back here, like that was one of those things where it was just like, no, like this is something that you don't want to give up, that kind of connection that you have with people and that level of trust where it's just like, now I know that whenever I have kids, if that ever happens, I can be like, oh, like hands down, this person's going to pick you up. They're going to take care of you. And you don't have to worry about like some of those other things like, oh, well, how will they be treated? Or like, you know how sometimes you have that thing in the back of your mind of like, what's going to happen if you have a stranger in your house to like babysit or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's just now that like, no, I'm 100% confident. I've known this person for 30 plus years, 40 plus years. I know them from when they first came up to where they're ended at now that I can trust this person with some of the things that are most important to me. So I think that kind of vibe has really helped me appreciate just how important it is to build relationships and maintain them.
So in this other place that you moved to, do you think in that place you could ever have that type of friend circle you had here? Or do you think this place is what gave you those 12 friends and you couldn't replicate that there? You think that's
true? Well, I think at the time I definitely couldn't replicate that there. And I mean, it's no big secret. I'm not trying to like have a shroud of mystery around this. I moved just outside of Toronto and like Oakville. So I was out in Oakville and I spent most of my time, I guess, in Toronto because I had a friend out there at the time just trying to meet people and different things. And there's always that kind of thing of like, well, you're not from Toronto. Like you're not from here or you're like, you know, like you're an outsider kind of thing. So I don't know, maybe 30 or 40 years from now, I might have been able to make some kind of inroads there. But it was just such a, like in a lot of bigger cities, what you see is like everything's like transitional, right? So you have a lot of people coming in and moving out or like coming to the bigger cities and making connections there. But no one expects anyone to really stick around for too long before moving on or doing this. Because even if you get a job in one of these bigger cities, you usually move out to the suburbs then in order to live, right? So that's where connections lost. I think in Winnipeg, just because of our size, that the suburbs are 30 minutes away from the downtown. Like there's nowhere place that's that far away that you can still make an easy effort to catch up with people and do whatever it is that you have to do and maintain those relationships and shit.
Well, Nick, do you have anything?
So I'm pretty sure you guys heard the story. I've said it before, but I'll tell all of our subscribers. So my parents basically moved to England. I could have been, depends on where my dad got a job, I could have been either Leeds or a Manchester kid, right, growing up. So my dad moved to Canada at the age of 18 by himself with his good buddy. They lived together for a few years. his good buddy, which they're still tight to this day, which is phenomenal. They go on road trips all the time. He decided to move to Hamilton, and my dad brought all of his brothers, my grandparents, to Winnipeg, and they all stayed together, just like how yours was, Bog. Everyone's kind of stayed together for a while until, you know, money was right. They branched out. You know, everyone was close to the kids and all my cousins and everything like that. But around, I guess around the time I was born, maybe like when I was five, you started to see things start depreciating. So I wasn't close to my cousins, wasn't close to my uncles. I never understood it why. I was just never close, right? So that was one of the big things that affected me. My dad had to live in Toronto for a bit. I had to go to Toronto. And then he went back to England. I was there for 6 months. But coming back here, you know, just I've always noticed like my brothers were always attached to my cousins because they was the same age length.
Yeah.
My age barrier was so much different. We're like, you know, 8 to 12 years difference, right? So growing up, I never
had... That's a big difference.
Big difference, 12 years, yes.
Like, that's... Yes. Yeah.
And I never had that. And, like, my younger cousins, they're, like, 5 to 7 years, they're younger, right? So it's kind of a big gap. And I'm kind of, like, in the middle of, like, nothing, right? So I never got close. I think that helped me out throughout the years, how, you know, being independent and just not worrying about... I know how you had it. You're very close with your cousins. You guys were all tight. I think that just helped me develop to being who I am now, you know, doing comedy, traveling for a while. I was... Being by yourself was... Like, I'm okay with it, you know? It just doesn't... it doesn't affect me. And I think one of those things was... It was, you know, do what you like in life. Don't do something that... You're trying to impress somebody else because in the end you want to impress yourself, right? So, you know, I always got backlash. I still to this day I get backlash of everything that I do. But honestly, that doesn't affect me. You move on because you throughout the years you realize, you know, their words can't kill you, right?
So for you it seems like in the terms of the question I asked as place, You do stitch together a little bit of the place, whereas, mm-hmm. you know, England or Toronto, or mm-hmm. and I definitely see that in you, like the sports you like, you know, et cetera, the places you like to visit, you know, where you propose, for example, stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. But it seems like to you, place is more mentally in your life than kind of physically.
Right.
Like your place as you at home
right.
versus... whatever, right? So exactly. I guess you kind of, it's a little bit different for you in terms of not really physical.
Right, exactly. So. You're 100% right on that.
Jimmy?
What you got, Jimmy?
So I've lived here my whole life, uninterrupted. A couple generations now, my family's been here. So it's nothing a matter of moving around. But, I mean, I did grow up where my parents weren't together, right? So my mom... And my stepdad, where I grew up with them, was in a nice area, rich area of the city. And with my dad was not a poor area, but let's say like a very humble, small home, right? Nothing fancy. Times were tough over on that side of the thing. So I kind of lived between both and I guess got a different scope on things. So... With the people that I went to school with through elementary and junior high, I always kind of felt a disconnect there because there was very much a sense of entitlement and like the spoiled kids, right? And I didn't get that on both sides, so that didn't quite jive with me, right? So ultimately, you know, I ended up moving in with my dad full time, being in the not like I say not a poor area, but not a fancy area, right? And a little bit of a different scope on things. But then I guess it was kind of a catch 22 is that I was kind of somewhere in the middle, and I think that the difference in the two areas and the two completely separate mentalities of the people that I was hanging out with, my friends from the area, kind of did shape my mentality. to being somewhere in the middle, and it a lot made me kind of adopt a completely different mentality of wanting to prove myself and be who I wanted to be, which ultimately was a big factor in, I moved out of my house to my own apartment when I was 15 years old. And I think that was a really big factor in that, is kind of being on both sides of the tracks, if you will, right? And although I don't know that in any one particular way, either upbringing or areas or anything shaped me, I think it was more that they led me in that direction. So where I decided that I needed to kind of figure it out on my own, and without a doubt, moving out when I was 15 and I never moved back, I kind of made it on my own, and that's when times were really rough, because I lived in some, without exaggerating, crack dens. That's kind of what made me look at things in a different perspective, realize, you know, how good or how bad things could be, and kind of made me approach life in the way that I do now.
Wow. So see, we told you on Thirst World Problems, it's not all about drinks all the time. We do get a little bit deeper, and I can vouch for all these guys I just spoke here. Everything that they're saying, that's who they are as people. Like Jimmy here, for example, he can be, you know, he could be at the bar and be the guy drinking the most, but then in the professional context, he's going to be, you know, the utmost of that. So that's not what, you know, that is his upbringing, but what more so I want to get to is the places you've stayed and lived and how that kind of shaped you, right? So hopefully some of the listeners, you know, like what we talked about there, because we get a little bit deeper on Thirst World Problems as well. So
I'm very curious if everyone wants to even, you know, give us their story. That'd be fantastic to hear.
Yeah. Drop a comment. We'll, you know, we're always posting on Instagram, so yeah. Feel free to direct message. There's sure. Always the email.
If you want us to read it out, we'll read it out as well. If not,
there's always unique stories that could always affect other people, right?
Here's an exclusive interview on Thirst World Problems.
We got Jimmy here. Jimmy, make it happen. Show him how it's done.
This is Thirst World Problems. Jimmy Moonshine back once again. We've got Belinda from the Patron Saint of Gin. You can check her out on Instagram. Belinda, how are you doing today?
Really well, thank you. How are you guys?
Fantastic.
Drunk.
Yeah, well, a little bit.
Could be better.
It's late night over here for us, so we started to drink a couple hours ago, and like Nick mentioned earlier, we've been mixing different cocktails that we're trying to get to your level here, so we've been throwing some different things together. I think the one thing that we can all agree on is that we've been mixing some Jim Beam cherry bourbon in with some tonic water and a splash of grenadine, and that's been not too bad. And then we've also got a salted caramel whiskey here that we've been drinking from our home in Manitoba here. Just wondering if you've got any staple drinks that you go to that are local.
Sure. Yeah, definitely gin. We've got like 180 plus distilleries in Australia, so there's like maybe, you know, a couple of hundred worth of gin bottles or different types to try. We don't have a big amount of whiskeys. We can't even have bourbon over here because it has to be made in America. But, yeah, I'm definitely a gin cocktail girl, martini on a Friday night, gin and tonic pretty much any given day or night.
Not for breakfast, though.
You know what? I don't judge. I don't think that there's a rule around alcohol if you're under 50.
There you go. Perfect guess for Thirst World Problems. Thank you, Belinda.
It's all right.
Belle, looks like you got one more year left breakfast.
Right?
I'm getting Belinda, what makes you just like, how do you, if you could break it down on coming up with, like, I'm looking through your Instagram here with all the images. How do you do the breakdown of a cocktail like that? Like,
yeah, you just don't overthink it. So you've got your product. You know that you want to use that gin that day or, you know, that time. And what's in that gin will dictate what you add to it. So there's floral gins, there's citrus gins, there's herbaceous gins. So depending on what the gin is, it would depend on what you mix it with. And then there's the mindfuck of the garnish. You know, that is the hardest part of it because you don't necessarily – it's for the gram. You know, it's not – it doesn't mean the drink tastes bad if it doesn't have that garnish. Mm-hmm. That's just to attract your attention. My MO, if you like, is for you to read which gin I'm using and why. So just to promote the Australian gin market, it might take a flower or a really out there citrus peel to do it, then that's what I do.
How long does something like that get put together, though?
When I first started, I was mixing like one every night, and it was just chaos because if they were, you know, if it didn't work out, I'd have to redo it and I'd have to redo it. And then there's four cocktails being drunk by 8 o'clock at night, and then that last shot's never going to be great. So I just moved it over to a whole day once a week of doing cocktails from 9 o'clock in the morning onwards, like a job. And that works very well. I don't drink all of the cocktails, I just taste it, write my notes. And move on to the next one.
So when you're saying that you're picking the product for the day, does that mean that you're an ambassador for that brand, or are you just literally going through the liquor mart and picking a certain gin that you want to try?
Yeah, good question. Like, I've got about 180 gins at home, and so I'm not an ambassador for all of them. Some of them do ask me to talk about theirs for them, which I'm very happy to do. But it is just on that point, for that cocktail, I think this gin would be the best. No one's paying me to say, could you talk about it? No one's asking me to do it. They just suggest a good way to have that cocktail, so I'll do it. I talk to all the distilleries that I use their products. That's my connection with it. If I don't know what I'm drinking, I'm probably not going to like it as much. Whereas if I know the background story, why they're a distiller, it really gets me involved with the product. And then I think, well, what's the best way to show their story, through a cocktail or through the caption? So that's how I approach each individual shot.
Wow. So from the caption on to the actual pictures, just because going on the Instagram, like, we at Thirst World Problems definitely try to post, you know, a picture of a drink here and there, but it's more so like, you know, it's in your house.
It's very amateurish.
We're drinkers. We are not what they call a mixologist or...
Exactly. So we were just wondering what kind of equipment's used to take pictures like this. Like, a lot of these pictures are very high quality. They look like it'd be in magazines and whatnot. And you're just posting these, I'm assuming personally by yourself. Like, what goes into developing images like that?
You guys are making me blush so hard. I use my iPhone, and up until just before Christmas, I had a cardboard box that I made a photo box out of with tissue paper and like a packing box and some cardboard. That was my $7 photo box. And then my dad and mum bought me this huge, massive, big photo box, which is ridiculous, with LED lights. So you can kind of see the progression from Christmas onwards, what happened, but it's still with the iPhone. I'm so basic. I don't have any mixology experience whatsoever. If you come here, I can definitely make all the cocktails that you see. I would love you to drink them, and you will enjoy them, I'm sure. I'll even, you know, garnish them the way they are. But if I would die in a bar behind one. Just like, so, I'd be 20 minutes trying to, you know, look up the recipe, and it's not a natural thing for me to make someone a cocktail on demand.
When should we come down there?
Anytime. I have, like, the gin wing is open for anyone, and you sit down in front. It's. I'll send you a photo. It's got LED lights that change colours, and you just sit here and you can take a flight, and as many as you can get through, I'm happy. It'll ruin you, but that's my trademark as well.
Thanks, Belinda. We're going to cut the interview right there. We just wanted to give you guys just a little teaser, just a little tiny morsel of the interview and the conversation that we had with the patron saint of gins. So next week, we're going to be releasing our full extended interview. So if you like what you heard tonight, you're really going to love the conversation we went on to have with Belinda. And we're going to be releasing that as a full extended extra episode early next week. So trust me, it's worth the wait.
Oh, Nick.
Oh, Nick.
Yes, there, Mr. Bell.
Do you know what part of the show this is?
Nope. What is it?
It's your favorite part.
Time to go home?
That's your favorite part of the show?
That's rude, man.
It's just what is it? Time for drinks?
It's the Minority Power Ranking.
Ah, my favorite. Let's start with number 5, Ja Rule. This little piece of shit is probably one of the worst investors in business of all time. If you guys see, this guy's a 50-year-old man trying to act like he's 21. And
he really does that, eh?
Really does that.
It's not fraud. It's just false advertising.
He's not a good businessman. He is not good with...
He is still... I would say that he is still relevant, though.
To who?
Just in the terms of... Just everyday... Like, he's always... There's always something going on, like... You know, 50 Cent bought all the concert tickets to his concert, and now the whole first 5 rows, there's no one there.
Yeah, but like, so how's that relevant?
But relevance...
He bought them on Groupon, too.
But relevance doesn't mean positivity all the time. It just means that your name is in the heads of people, for example.
Not in anyone's head that was going to buy a ticket.
Well, that's not what I'm saying. I want to go to a Ja Rule concert. I'm just saying, like...
It's murder.
Which, honestly, that would be pretty dope, honestly.
If you get a Groupon ticket, your career is fucked. Anyway. Number 4.
So, number 4, I do have James Harden again making an appearance on the Minority Power Ranking. I know people are probably a little tired of, you know, me talking about James Harden, but I just think he's having an incredible season. He's doing something we've never seen before. You can't go against that, and you know he's up there against with the scoring record up against the greats. So again, playoffs come, we might have some issues.
You're one of those.
They're not my favorite team or anything, but I'm just saying it.
Winnipeg Jets. Yeah, we gotta beat the Ducks, man, tonight.
Okay. Anyway, when you see greatness, you gotta look at it and you know give it the nod. So James Harden. Number 4.
Who you got? Who'd you have on your team? James Harden, Steph Curry.
Steph Curry.
Number 3.
Number 3 on the Minority Power Rankings. I have Marianne Rule. For those of you that don't know, that is the caterer from the Fyre Festival. So if you've watched the documentary, she's the lady that is just denouncing the whole festival. She was super heartbroken by the fact that she went out of her way, did everything that she could to cater and provide food for these kids that were coming to the island. And then everyone from Fyre Festival just denounced her. So this was, three, 4 years ago. So now that the documentary came out, they started a GoFundMe for this lady. So Miss Rule has been able to rack in $200,000 for her, the money that she lost.
Wow.
She said that the amount of money that she lost was about $100,000. So what she's doing is...
How does she even have that money?
Well, she owned the bar that... at the start, like, they all go to that one bar or whatever. And so she owned the bar and she was doing the catering. So she had money. So what she did is she reached into her life savings to start to provide, to start paying back, like, all of her employees and some of the other employees. So that's why she was in the hole. So after this GoFundMe, she was able to pay back the money that she had spent. And now and on top of that, she has an extra $100,000. So what she's doing with that $100,000 is now she's reaching out to, I guess, the guy who coordinated the actual like physical laborers that were preparing the site, and is trying to get some of them some of this money. So that $100,000 is going to be dispersed back to the other workers that are from the Bahamas themselves that are actually going to get some of that money.
Does she know that that's United States dollars, $100,000, or do you think that's like some like lesser currency, or isn't that like a huge sum for a place like that?
Well, I think all the money that's owed to them is in like USD. Like, I think it's not just like, whoa, like this or that.
What's the Barbados currency?
Rum? Bajan Rums. Currency? Rum? Just Bajan. Yeah. That's Australian. Hmm. Australian.
Is Barbados currency?
Just Bajan dollars.
Bajan dollars?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I wonder what, I don't know the currency.
Was this not in the Bahamas, though?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Number 2.
Number two, we're gonna throw Soulja Boy in there.
Drake.
He had an interview. What was that last week? I want to say proved to be one of the most quotable things in the last. I mean, let's throw 2018 in there. In the last year,
put the internet on fire.
It was amazing. Let's be real. It was hilarious. It was amazing. That guy is a character. But he brought up some points in there. He brought up the fact that he was basically the first, and it was acknowledged by YouTube and everything to throw his business on social media, and he kind of started something with that. I mean, he went on further to say in that interview that a lot of current artists have really, I mean, well, we'll put it in different terms, but let's say taken inspiration from what he did. And that he's kind of shaped the industry. And although some of it can be disputed, a lot of it really can't. I mean, he made a lot of valid points. So although he may be kind of somebody you laugh and listen to right now, a lot of what he said is pretty valid. So I'm going to throw him in there.
How many times have you guys seen this interview?
I mean, probably four times alone from you showing it to me, but beyond that, another couple times.
B, how about you?
I've only seen it once, but just from what he was saying, I definitely understand what he's saying. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's saying it in terms of, if I say this, it carries 100% weight and this is what it is. But then a lot of people look at just his image and they're like, okay, this might be 20% of what he's saying, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And then if you really look at it, it's like, hey, his points might have, you know, 10-15% to what actually is. You can't dispute that. Like, he's not the first person to ever put a music video out on YouTube, but he is the first person to put out a music video on YouTube that, you know, put out that many views, mm-hmm, to the point where he was flown out there. So could you say that the YouTube transitioned into music videos such as, you know, clips on Instagram or artists about to drop this or that? Or you could definitely liken those two things. So, mm-hmm, Soulja Boy number two, I gotta give it to him.
Man, Soulja Boy lost a lot of credibility for me when he started putting out like fake consoles, man.
That was actually really
that's
weird.
That's like, I just want to throw it out there that you can actually pay like $50 right now on there's a website where you can get shout outs from celebrities. You can get this fucker to say whatever you want for like $50.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
No, I don't think that's true. But also, Soulja Boy. It's not true. It is not true. And Soulja Boy endorses the Thirst World Problems podcast. Go check our Instagram.
Oh, yeah. totally not bought and paid for.
Number one goes to someone very special in my heart. The man is named Meek Mill. Now, if you guys don't know, Meek Mill and Jay-Z launched a prison reform organization along with Bell's favorite owner in the NFL, Robert Kraft.
Fuck off. That's B over here, man. His fucking Patriots tattoo.
As well as the co-owner for Fanatics and the 76ers, Michael Rubin. What they're trying to do is, basically, they pledged $50 million to launch an organization as CEO. And all it does is basically just to help the system for people who, you know, wrongly accused along those lines. And they just see what if the punishment was the right call for that time. Right. Do you have anything on that?
Well, it's just interesting to see that these guys are taking it so seriously. I mean, you always keep hearing, okay, we got to do something for the community. And then they got on Travis Scott about like, okay, well, we don't really want you performing at the Super Bowl, all that kind of stuff. And everyone was like, well, what are you guys doing? And now you're actually seeing these moguls. You're actually seeing these men with stature aligning themselves, not only with other like rappers or hip hop artists, but also with people that actually carry weight in the political community. Like Robert Kraft has connections to the White House. Let's just come right out and say it. And so now you're actually getting momentum and substance behind what these guys have been talking about wanting to do for a while. And now you're starting to see it. Now, it's still a bit too early for me to be like, okay, these guys are on point, until I start to see what the results of it are. Right now, it's just a bunch of rich guys talking to other rich guys. Mm-hmm. But if there's actually something that bills of this, or even there's even more awareness about prison reform, then now we can start to see, is this actually going to start to benefit the community? And it's not just like the Black community in the States, but it's all the minority communities, really, when you talk about like the Spanish or Latino communities out there as well, that you're starting to see this on a more diverse level and a larger level of, okay, we're actually trying to do something for people that aren't just in the upper echelon. And it's not just about hip hop per se. Now it's actually about the average Joe actually seeing the successful people do putting their hands towards something that will benefit the average person.
No one really helps out the Indian community when if someone goes to jail. We're like, fuck you. You're done. Did you ever realize that? Everyone else helps each other out. We just like, you know what? Fuck you, man.
Okay. Anyway. Run back down that list again. Number five we had.
We got Ja Rule at number five.
Number four, James Harden.
Number three,
Marianne Roll.
Number two,
Soulja Boy.
And number one, we got Meek Mill, and I don't know who the other person is.
The Jigga Man.
You don't know who the other person is?
Nope.
Shit.
H to the Izzo.
That got phased out ages ago in my life.
H to the Izzo. H to the Izzo.
Kill the lights and cut the mics. This episode of Thirst World Problems is over. Once again, thank you to the patron saint of gin that joined us on today's episode. You'll have a chance to hear in a full extended interview early next week, so make sure you check that one out. And big thanks to all of our listeners that listened all the way through on this jam-packed episode. If there was a segment that you liked, if you just liked the show in general, please, please, please make sure that you reach out and you tell someone that you know about it. Tell a friend, tell family members. If there's anyone that you think might be interested, please tell them, please share of it. We've got opportunities coming, but we need to raise our subscriber count, and we're counting on you guys to help us out on that side of business. Now, as always, we're going to leave you with one of my favorite parts of the show, a drunken story. This one is told to us by the patron saint of gin herself, Miss Belinda. And did you have a chance to think of a drunken story that we could get for you there?
It's funny. You know, I've been drinking for 30 years. You can imagine, you know, there's so many stories. What my talent is to actually ruin people while they're drinking. And I do that so well because I can drink for a long time. All I get is super more happy and talkative and I love it. I love whatever's happening. But everyone else seems to disintegrate around me. One guy I know, I was actually feeding him doubles, rum and cokes, and just I was having just like Diet Coke, and he was thinking I was drinking, and he got into this huge DM with me. So by the time, or deep and meaningful conversation. So by the time his wife came and picked him up, it was just one step short of calling an ambulance. She wouldn't talk to me forever. the other girl, she was here the other day at the gin wing. She had like a million drinks, and then I woke up to all these texts the next day. She lives nearby. She walked home. She said, "Have you seen my bra and my phone?"
And you had both,
said,
I assume?
With both of them. And she said, "Never mind, I've found my phone. I just don't know where my bra went." And she said, "I stopped by the pool and I couldn't get out the gate, so I climbed it." And she's 5 foot and the gate's 7 foot. And that's where she found her phone, at the foot of the gate, because when she was climbing over, it must have fallen out. But she doesn't know where the bra is.
That's hilarious.
Thanks for listening to the Thirst World Problems Podcast. For more exclusive content, follow us on Instagram @ThirstWorldPod. Make sure to subscribe, like, and share.